Coming to you live from my apartment. It's Robinson Podcast, and now here's the guy who, much like Lisa, never fails to disappoint himself. Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Cesternino, and a very big day here on Rob Has a Podcast. I spent it starting off this morning. I spoke with the most recently kicked off survivor, Jonathan Penner, had a great conversation with him. As expected, I did my Jonathan Penner impression for him, and he did not like it. But that being said, I thought we had a very fun interview. Always love when I get a chance to talk to Jonathan Penner. But much like Colton did on Survivor Jeopardy, I'm going for the true daily double today. I am now going to bring in a couple minutes, the one and only original winner of Survivor, Richard Hatch, and talk to him about the game. Two great people to talk about Survivor with. Two of the more loquacious survivors that have ever played the game in one day here for you guys on robhasawebsite.com. Also, speaking of loquacious and engaging survivors, I spoke with Stephen Fishback last night, and we recapped the entire episode from the Survivor Know-It-All's point of view. And we did that last night. If you want to check that out in our archives or watch us live every Wednesday on robhasawebsite.com. And speaking of robhasawebsite.com, if you haven't been to the website this week, we've had a bit of a makeover, a few months in the making. I started this project back in August. I wanted to redesign the website. It should be loading faster. Hopefully you find it more aesthetically pleasing. It should help us out more in the search engine rankings. We have finally, this is the podcast Death Star we have been waiting for. So very excited. A lot of time and energy and effort went into creating the new website. Responses have been mostly positive. So very happy to see that. And I hope you guys enjoy the new website. And let me know what you think on Twitter, at Rob Cesternino. And I appreciate everybody who's been going ahead and doing their holiday shopping using the link robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, because they've got a ton of great deals. People are saving a lot of money on all the good holiday gifts that people want, and also supporting the podcast in the process. So thank you guys very much. Had such a fun week so far this week on Rob Has a Podcast. Between I spoke with Pete, who got kicked out of the tribe last week on Monday, talked to Gordon Holmes this week about the Survivor Hall of Fame and what he thinks about this season. Of course, Survivor Jeopardy on Tuesday, did the Know-It-Alls show on Wednesday, talked to Penner this morning, got Hatch coming up in just a minute. So it's been such a fun season and such a fun week on robhasawebsite.com. Don't miss any of the podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed to us on iTunes. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes and make sure you're subscribed. And we love it when you guys leave us feedback on iTunes. If you give us 5 stars, if you leave us a comment, that helps us out in our iTunes rankings, helps us get up closer to the top of the charts. And that's a good thing for all of us, because when we get to the top of the charts, then we can get better guests. Because when we say, if the podcast has low ratings, nobody will want to come on. But if we get good ratings, people will come on and talk with us and have fun. So speaking of talking with us and having fun, let's do this. All right, everybody. It's always a pleasure when we get to hear from this guy. I mean, I don't know what else you could say. He is the original Survivor winner, the man who wrote the book on Survivor strategy, still 25 seasons later. Here he is, Richard Hatch.
Hey, Rob. The pleasure's mine.
Yeah.
Love doing this podcast. I always get great feedback from really bright people after doing a podcast with you.
Well, Richard, for my money, there's no better person to talk about the game with. And it's always a thrill to get to talk to you. And thank you for giving us a little of your time today.
Oh, my pleasure. What a good season, huh?
It is a good season. But before we get to the fun stuff, Richard, everything going okay in your world?
Yeah, just peachy. You know, my world is an interesting ride. It's a fun journey. There are still some struggles and some battles, but they're manageable and life is good.
Okay, good. Well, then let's jump into this season. And yeah, as you mentioned, it has been a good season. Last night we saw Penner go out of the game, who was fun to watch, but made a very costly error last week. What was your take on Penner? Are you a Penner fan?
I'm a fan of anybody who's really trying to play the game, and certainly he was trying to play the game. I don't think he understands it quite as well as he thinks he does, and there are a lot of players like that. But I get why he didn't want to make a commitment. But the problem with letting the people with whom you didn't want to make a commitment know that you didn't want to make a commitment is exactly what happened. Bye-bye.
So do you think even if he didn't want to do that, for one, it was foolish not to take that deal, but you're saying that he should have at the very least said, oh, that sounds interesting. That's definitely an idea. Whereas he just flat out said last week, no way, we don't want to go to the final. Let's just go to the final six. I don't want to do what you're talking about.
Right. And when somebody says something like that, Lisa, of all people, that was great. Her response was great. Oops, you had your chance. Well, you needed to make it appear at least that you wanted to take the chance with Lisa or would consider it, as you just said. I mean, you can't just say, no, screw you, kind of, even if it's being honest and all of that other crap that's got nothing to do with the game of Survivor, and expect that you're going to stay there and be successful. You just can't. But let's give Penner some credit where credit's due, because, you know, in the tribal council, granted, he screwed up last week, but in tribal council this week, wow, I thought that was great. I mean, he really put it out there and nailed it on the head and gave them some tough information to think about. But you know, people aren't real thinkers for the most part. So it's they didn't have enough time or whatever the reason, they couldn't integrate whatever he was saying into their plans. You know, when he said Denise or Malcolm are going to win it if you get rid of me, he really could have put that nail on the head.
Yeah, that's something that you guys both have in common. You're both very straight talkers and have no problem, you know, expressing that opinion when you have it. And I think that's makes for very good television. That's what we want in a Survivor player, as opposed to somebody like Carter who can't get a sentence out. It's very good when people can articulate what they're thinking.
Rob, what's going on with Carter? What's the deal with that?
There's one every season. There's always a Carter.
But he's there. And is there something simmering beneath the surface there? I mean,
no.
Okay.
But you know what? If your season was now, Sean would be the Carter. I mean, they just wouldn't show him. He would be just like, they're like, okay, this guy isn't going to, you know, he's not going to factor into the gameplay here. So we'll just spend more time focusing on what's really going on. Whereas in the beginning, they would show everybody, but Carter is just not part of the story. So they're not even wasting the film on him.
Ooh, now see, I can't relate him. I mean, I can't connect him to Sean too closely, because, you know, Sean was just like, wow, from another planet with some of his choices and the way he approached the game. And Carter, for example, you know, traded the baked potato for the rice and beans. You know, good move in front of all the other people. That was thoughtful. You know, Sean would have said, you know, I'm taking the baked potato, but I'll change my alphabet from C to D or so. I mean, you know, he really just didn't get it.
Rich, was that, you brought up the baked potato. Was that even an option? Like, can anybody really take, besides Sean maybe, can anybody honestly take the baked potato? I mean, maybe if it was like, oh, what's under this? Oh, it's, you know, $50,000. Or do you want, like, I mean, it's a baked potato. I mean, you know?
I could see a reason for somebody to do it. I don't know who might, but, you know, somebody being very direct right there at the end when they knew that they were on the chopping block and it really didn't even matter. And they just wanted to say, you know, send a signal to somebody else maybe there that they were going to pair up with about how strong they were going to be. Listen, you know, I'm the target here. Look, I even took the baked potato. Now you've got to go with me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm hated.
Yeah.
And I can see reason to do it, but, you know, that's the way you've got to think during the game. All these possibilities, yeah, as you do, and you know, but I don't know why Carter did it, trade. And, you know, it was a good decision, I think, for him. But I'm watching him because I don't know where he's going to play out. He'll have some impact somewhere. I'm convinced of that.
Interesting. Well, you know, he could have an impact, one, if he wins an immunity, or if they get rid of this Abby Maria this week, he could be an important vote at five here, because there's really two alliances of two, kind of like in your season where you had you and Rudy and Kelly and Sue at, you know, coming down to the final two. And ideally, I mean, I don't know if we knew, you know, everything there was to play the game in season one. You would not want to have that two-two split at the final four, because as you saw, you know, that those tiebreakers are crazy.
They can be. That's absolutely true. And so he could figure in here somewhere. And you know, he's been relatively harmless to most people. He's, you know, he's just kind of there, but he also seems a little bit capable. You know, he's not like a goof bucket who can't do any challenge or anything. So I don't know. We'll see how he plays out. Abby, though, you mentioned, holy cocamole. These are the ones that come in. You know, when people ask me for my advice, which they do pretty regularly, about what should they do when they're applying and what should they, you know, do when they're on the show, and My number one issue is, listen, it's not a place to learn about who you are. Mm-hmm. Figure that out as you're, you know, growing up. Get some self-awareness. And holy crap, this girl is as clueless a human being about who she is or how she's perceived as anyone I've ever encountered.
Well, Rich, this is what I wanted to ask you. Now, she is of Brazilian heritage, and I know that your significant other, Emiliano, is of Argentinian background. Do you have any insight into dealing with South Americans?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's easy and kind of quick for people to think, oh, this is a cultural thing, but frankly, in South America, therapy is much bigger, a much more common and much more encouraged thing than it is even here in America. So who you are and how you interact with people and your relationships, they're all kind of more a part of the culture, not less. So that it's even more fascinating to me to watch her, a Brazilian, who is as absolutely clueless as she is. I don't buy for a minute that it's cultural.
I do have to give her some credit, though. Just say if you can give Carter credit, I'm going to give Abby Maria a little bit of credit, because she did seem to kind of get her head out of her butt on this episode, where finally it was like that was a wake-up call when everybody came down at her at Tribal Council and said, I am going to start playing the game. And, you know, whether it was believable or not, at least she started trying with that. I'm going to save my money at the auction. I'm going to buy something to help me. I'm going to pretend I have the hidden immunity idol. And so I was impressed. I didn't think she had that in her.
Okay. I mean, I kind of did. I mean, I don't think it's a real different approach to have, like, ooh, got her dander up and like, okay, I'm going to hold off and buy the thing that's going to give me. I think that was smart. I'll give her credit for buying the clue and the advantage. But I don't think her demeanor is sufficiently altered, and it could have been. She could have been just slightly more. She doesn't have to be like pathetically apologetic so that they think she's lying, but she could have just been more personable, more aware that she is, you know, so off-putting. How can you not look at people around you and recognize in their nonverbals that you're just to them? and that's her problem. And you know, I agree with you. She made smart choices this weekend. Good for her. She's there. But I don't see her thinking enough, you know, a condition I fear far too many of us humans live with.
Now, this season, we also had somebody else brought back from way back, Mike Scoopin, all the way back to season two. Now, you must have had some run-ins with Mike Scoopin back in the day. Do you have a good read on Mike Scoopin?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've seen it. We've encountered each other many, many, many times over the years and spent time together. And I feel like I know him pretty well. I know he loves the game. I know he really wanted to play. I'm happy to see, and for Penner too, that they, you know, have made it this far in the game. I listen to what Mike is saying as he's playing, and yes. Go ahead.
No, I'm riveted. I want to hear what you have to say. Sorry to interrupt.
I'm hoping he is a little more confident than he's appearing. Let's put it that way, about his approach to people, because he feels a little bit, it feels a little bit to me like he's wavering a little too much. Well, it would be a little too much if I were in the game. He'd be toast. But it may not be too much for other people, like with Lisa, who, you know, is having this wonderful life learning experience. Good for her. But, oh, God, girl, not here. You know, it is about the money. When she just said it's not about the money, I wanted to smack her from one end of the island to the other. But I get it. You know, I mean, I think she really is. I'm feeling these emotions, but I think you know how I feel about people letting out these crazy ass emotions in the game
yes.
everybody else to see. It's just not the game, and I feel for them as a human being, but oh, for crying out loud, not as a Survivor player. You're a goof, you know, you're losing it.
All right, so much in there. Let's take it piece by piece. Let's talk about Scoopin and his game first and this decision that he made last night. Ultimately, either him or Lisa could have flipped. Penner, Carter, and Abby Maria were all going to vote for Denise. They didn't have to both jump over. It was at Final 7. It only took one of them to flip. Now, neither of them decided to do it. They stuck with Malcolm and Denise because I guess they made this pact last week where they shook hands and said, hey, we're the final four, that's it. But they both admitted that it would probably be in their best interest to go to the end on the side with Penner. So
who in this group this year said something earlier in the show, I think it was Scoopin, and that's why we're talking about there isn't just one big move in a Survivor game. There have to be multiple really pretty big moves before you are successfully in the winner's seat.
Yes.
Do you remember? Somebody
said that last week.
Scoopin.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought it was Scoopin. And so here I think he blew it. That's my take from the outside, not knowing all the details, obviously. But I feel like Denise is an extraordinary player. You know, I think she's I love the way Malcolm is so powerfully aware of everything it takes to play and is playing the same way. And so those two are quite a powerful pair. And I would not for the life of me be surprised if either one of them won. And I think Scoopin lost an opportunity this week by not thinking this through a little bit better.
Yeah, it was a very questionable decision because they both admitted that, hey, I would probably have a better chance to win if we went with Penner. So the question really was why? Why did they do it? Was it just because of this handshake? And that's really, are you even there?
Well, I think what happens is a very, very, it doesn't happen to me, but it happens to others. You see the emotion in Lisa when she's talking about the struggle to try and decide what to do when she's made a commitment here or made a commitment there. And it's a very, very real thing playing out on screen for viewers to revel in. It's awesome to watch, but it's just silliness for the game. I don't mind if you portray that to other players, but if you're actually letting those emotions overwhelm you, then you're screwed, period. I mean, you're really, really screwed. And that, I think, to a lesser degree than what we've observed happening to Lisa, happens to most people out there.
Mm-hmm.
They let their emotions get the best of them. So I think these folks who said, yeah, you and I, ooh, yeah, what's the, you know, off we go to the end, just aren't thinking through where they fall in the hierarchy of that group if they go to the end.
You know, I was really puzzled by Lisa last night when she finds out that the vote is going to be for Penner.
Yeah.
And then she comes and talks to Penner and basically reveals the whole plan to him. And I said, okay, great. I feel like this is good. And she's telling him, hey, but I'm going to vote for you, but work your magic. Who is he supposed to work her magic, his magic with if she's not even going to vote with him? And what was the point of even telling him if she's not going to vote with him?
Okay, so David Letterman has stupid animal tricks or whatever it is. This is like stupid human tricks, except it's so freaking common. This is Lisa trying to ameliorate her own guilt or something, trying to assuage her own kind of sense of obligation to Penner, whom she really liked. I really like you, Jonathan. I mean, it's craziness. She's like been, I don't know how many days has she been there. She's a 40-something-year-old woman. She's, you know, obviously bright and personable, but her emotions overwhelm her. She feels connected to this guy who's actually playing the game and who's actually capable of expressing how Lisa is like connected to him in this, you know, this friendship thing. These friendship things can develop over time after the game, but in the game, every moment, if you have any interest in winning, you've got to keep your eye on the prize. And these people just don't. So you shouldn't have been surprised, I don't think, when Lisa went back to Scoopin and did that. She wanted to feel better. She likes him a lot. He's a good guy. They're friends, you know. How damn silly is that? But she had to make herself feel better by letting him know what's happening and wishing him well. That way she can, you know, not cry and not worry about what he was going to feel toward her after the game is over.
Now, how much are you buying Lisa, and this is her genuine emotions and not something that she's doing for the camera, and this is how she wants this? She doesn't want to be portrayed as, you know, the bitch or anything like that. Everything is such a hard decision for her. She's doing everything from a good, kind place. Do you think that that's weighing into her perception and this is sort of like all for her image, all going on Survivor?
Oh, don't I wish. I wish that were the case. That would be like evidence of intelligence that would just be inspiring to me beyond description. But no, she is unquestionably the kind, gentle, emotional, sincere woman you see. And that's great. You know, I actually think I'm as kind and sincere outside the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no ego there, but Rob, I don't think she's playing people at all. I think she wanted to, and I think she recognized early and has said a number of times in the midst of this game, look, you know, the game's bigger than me. And I think it really is. I think she's just that genuine and just that emotional, and those tears and the feelings, that's not acting. That's Lisa feeling life and learning about herself. And, you know, kudos to casting. You know, brilliant. Lynn Spillman, you are amazing. Because she's perfect for the game, but sorry, not to win.
Now, Rich, were you a fan of The Facts of Life?
I was not a fan. I hardly remember it. I wasn't a big TV guy, but I did see it. I remember her character. I did see, you know, several episodes.
Yeah.
I remember the girls and their school marm.
Mrs. Garrett, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the song, kind of.
Yeah. Do you like seeing Survivor? I mean, Survivor's come so far from Survivor 1. Do you like seeing people who have some celebrity being mixed in with the new players?
I do. Whatever these twists are that the producers bring to the game, I tend to enjoy because they add a level of interest. But for me, all of the value in watching the show, all of the enjoyment that I get comes from watching humans be human. It's a real game. It's not just reality for me. It really is about who we are as people. And I love exploring that. And so So just sitting and watching people be themselves, even in the midst, after all these seasons of knowing what it takes to play this game well, it's just fascinating and interesting, and I feel should be much more fascinating and interesting to even more viewers than it is. I mean, sadly, we are much more drawn as a society to football. But, you know, boom, boom, run again the other way, oh, boom, than to the complicated pieces of this show and of this game.
Yeah, I like both of those things, Survivor and football, but I do feel like Survivor does get trivialized a lot. And then Survivor trivializes itself with a lot of the, you know, hey, that's not dirt, it's poop stuff that comes up from time to time on the show. But, I mean, there is probably no other show on television that is as much of a mirror that tells us about ourselves than Survivor.
Agreed. And I think most of that goes over most viewers' heads, although not all, because there's a tremendously bright fan base that exchanges thoughts and contact me about what they think about what people are doing. And so it's always interesting to me to know that people are enjoying what they're seeing happen.
Yeah. You know, it's really, really fun to watch it play out season after season. Now, let's talk about, you mentioned Denise earlier, and Denise is somebody who I like a lot as a game player, but something she said a week ago really didn't sit well with me in this tribal council with Abby Maria, when she said, look, this season, I don't want it to be the season that we just take the person who's easy to beat to the end. I want to get rid of the people that are easy to beat. I want to take the best player to the end and get rid of a bad player like Abby Maria. And I got to imagine that your head is exploding when you hear something like that.
Yeah, you don't even have to imagine it. You know it. You know, that's just stupidity. It's just dumb. She's a bright, bright woman, physical, determined. She has the right demeanor for the show because she's not explosive. She keeps much of her thought to herself, but she's having thoughts, which is great. And that's just one huge error. You know, you just don't say stupid things like that unless it's a really calculated thing for a particular reason to help somebody else who's too daft to know that that's a stupid thing to say and would somehow benefit an alliance that we're not clear about. Maybe, you know, is she trying to suck up to Malcolm in some way that she notices he needs that we can't tell, for example? You know, I don't know. But other than that, I can't think of that being an intelligent thing to have said. So, yeah.
The only strategic way that makes sense, and this point is moot because she kind of agreed with it in her confessional, was where if she feels like she's a threat and she needs to get the vibe out there, hey, we need to take the best players to the end. Because otherwise, if we start talking about, you know, oh, we got to vote off all the best players, we could take somebody who's bad to the end, then people say, oh, let's vote off Denise next. She's the next best player here. Sort of like a Survivor All-Stars type deal when you start getting rid of the winners early on. You know, it's sort of like you can get to a situation where you can, you know, start getting these good players knocked out.
True.
Yeah. So I like Denise a lot as a player. But she might be sort of like in the same boat that Kim was in last season, where we were starting to get on Kim towards the end of the season last season, where it's like, oh my God, she's getting rid of the people that she could beat so easily. Why is she taking these people to the end? And she still won. I forget if it was 7 votes or 8 votes. You know, sometimes it's just you're in such a good spot, it doesn't even matter who you have up against you at the end.
That's true. And Kim was, and I love Kim because she was really a great player. But Denise isn't in that spot yet. So I don't think she's as good a player as Kim. I don't think she's as easily able to get as many votes. So I don't think that her having said that is in any way helpful to her.
No, I don't think so either.
Or doing it.
No,
I don't think doing that makes any sense whatsoever.
Now, Rich, you had one of the most famous exits on Survivor when you were bamboozled on the Survivor All-Stars. Penner had a pretty memorable exit last night. What did you think of Penner's exit?
Yeah, when he got to turn around and like come back into scene like two or three times.
Yeah.
Kept looking. You know, my, I've been bamboozled, was honest. It was just the reaction at the time I had. I really hoped that they had, you know, bought into what I was telling them because it was true. Anyway, I told them to keep me or they would go next, and they did. But Penner, I think, just didn't know what to do with it. He was still a little too wrapped up in his disappointment, which I understand. You know, it's his third time playing, and he really wanted it bad. I love that when people want to play the game and they have this intense passion behind playing it. So, you know, I don't know. You have to go somehow. You might as well say something. You notice how many people say absolutely nothing because they're so stunned or just haven't got anything to say.
Well, some people didn't have anything to say when they were there on the island, let alone getting voted out.
True.
Yeah, but I thought it was pretty good. Penner was a lot of fun to watch. Yeah, too bad he made that one mistake because at one point he was really in a great spot. He really like peaked too early. I know a thing or two about that in real life. But he peaked way too soon. I'm sorry, Rich. He peaked too soon, and just like around that episode where he won the immunity, and he was really riding high, but came crashing back down to earth too soon.
True.
Yeah.
True.
So, where do we go now? Here we're at the final six. We have this foursome here of Lisa and Penner, or Lisa and Scoopin, and then Malcolm and Denise. For this foursome, are they all in lockstep here, or does the two twosomes want different things, you think?
I think Denise and Malcolm are in charge. I think Lisa and Scoopin are not. I think they're in lockstep, which is perfect for Denise and Malcolm. I think Lisa and Scoopin are expendable and will be dutifully released to their, you know, disappointment. Lisa, I think, is probably has already accepted that. I think Scoopin will, you know, be infuriated and confused and frustrated.
We hope he doesn't get hurt on the way out.
Yeah, gosh, he's dangerous to himself, but. But these two, you know, who does it come down to? That would be an interesting thing. And I'm not sure who the jurors would vote for between Denise and Malcolm. And will there be three this time? Are they gonna vote?
Yeah, we don't know. There's only six people left. There's two regular Wednesday episodes left. So by that math, we should get down to a final four going into the finale, which points to a classic Survivor finale of start with four, get down to two, and maybe nine people on the jury. And that's what it looks like, but they haven't revealed that either to the players or to us.
Yeah, that's what it feels like to me, too, the Denise Malcolm kind of vote. I have no inside information whatsoever. I don't want anyone to think I know anything about anything. I don't, but I'm just feeling like this is a Denise Malcolm final two. Scoopin and Lisa will be, you know, released. Abby and Carter, you know, they aren't really considerations. But you know, who knows? Could one of them, if they've got some kind of, you know, spark or something happens in their brain, you know, crosswires, you switch something up and cause something to change. Sure. And that would be really fun to watch.
Yeah. I think that this is going to be a pretty tame episode, this next one, either the vote out Abby Maria or vote out Carter, but it'll be interesting to see which twosome picks who goes home. But the one I'm watching for is that final five, where one of these twosomes needs to pick up that third person so that they can vote out the other twosome. So we'll see who it's going to be that's left, whether it's Abby and Maria or whether it's Carter. I think Malcolm and Denise have a better relationship with Carter. And I think that maybe Lisa and Scoopin might have a better relationship with Abby Maria, but that's just speculation. Nobody knows what Abby Maria could do.
I could see why you would speculate that, but I don't think there's a chance that Abby or Carter are bright enough to take over, which they could do by going with Scoopin and Lisa.
Yeah.
I think Denise and Malcolm are too crafty. Which is, you know, they play too well, and they're already planting seeds with whomever it is behind the scenes that we haven't seen, so that these either one of them, Abby or Carter, would go with them.
Well,
and they'd have no chance, neither one of them, Abby or Carter, against Denise or Malcolm. What do you think of Malcolm?
I think that Malcolm has been very solid. I mean, I have not seen any, you know, master stroke type play from Malcolm just yet throughout the game. But this could be one of these situations where him and Denise are just such a powerful twosome that both of their individual achievements are sort of overlooked because the other one is always right there. But Malcolm seems like he has everything it takes to be a very, very good to great Survivor player. I just haven't seen the, you know, masterful move other than knowing when to play the immunity idol and when not to play it.
But, you know, you of all people know that masterful play is often not seen. It's often what's not done or
that's
it's
true.
Quiet. And Malcolm, for example, when Lisa, you know, had her little brain fried thing or whatever she did and gave up Malcolm's plan and, you know, Malcolm could have, like most players would have, kind of gotten pissed off or exploded or done the wrong thing. And he did everything right. He was calm. He was just nonplussed throughout the entire exposure of that having happened to him. And I thought he'd been kind of relying on her, given the way he described her as so trustworthy, et cetera.
Well, one of the things that I had read about this episode that happened last night, I guess there was a secret scene, and I haven't seen it yet, but I guess Malcolm got everybody in that foursome to sort of swear on their families, hey, we're the four, right? We're the four. And, you know, Lisa and Mike have very strong religious beliefs, and I guess that was enough to say, hey, swear on your family, and that's what they did, and he got them to all stick together.
No, here we go. A use for superstition. I didn't think there ever was one, but there you go. Perfect. That's brilliant. And that, it, with, you know, if that happened, that's an example of masterful play.
No, it's good. It's very good. It's hard to knock Malcolm or Denise. I mean, they've both been very, very, very strong and coming from a position where they both should have been out of this game. You know, they both, being the one person in a new tribe, both of those tribes should have picked them off right away, and they didn't.
What is it about us humans in these games? And here it is, Survivors, episode, you know, season 25?
25.
Season 25, and you know, swear on your family, and somebody's doing it and buying that. I mean, that's just crazy. You know, as soon as you hear those words, you should do it, swear on your family, and then look for the best way out, because you're obviously getting sucked into something potentially dangerous.
Yeah. Don't you know you could do like Sandra and say, no, I swore on my family that I'm going to screw you over.
Yeah, but you don't say that out loud.
No, you say it to the camera.
Exactly. And Sandra's another one where some of the masterful play was in her, even though she did say all kinds of phenomenal things, in her not saying things, in her, you know, her looks or her going on and allowing things to fester elsewhere. I mean, a lot of the play that she did well was kind of hidden, and that's part of why she doesn't get as much credit as she I think should sometimes for being such a good player.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I mean, Malcolm, to his credit, you know, has not done anything other than early in the season. If I'm going to knock Malcolm at all, the whole thing with Cookie Gate and that Angie with the cuddling and stuff, that was probably not a high point early in the season for Malcolm. But you know, I can't fault him too much.
True. You know, he was he went along with that, but even the way he handled getting, you know, the negative feedback about having cuddled wasn't bad. He didn't overreact, which is just refreshing to see.
Yeah, and he did vote her out when push came to shove. He didn't keep her out. Yeah,
good for him.
So, Rich, if this is, as we're projecting, a Malcolm and Denise final two, who do you think would win?
I think those are the subtle details I'd leave to the viewers, because we don't see everything. As much as the game is real and what we see is reality, we don't see everything. So there are lots and lots, hours and hours and hours of subtleties that are going on that we're not quite aware of between Denise and Malcolm. I think they're both good players. I don't think Denise is as obviously, assertively in charge of her own destiny as it appears Malcolm is. And I think if she were more assertively in charge of her own destiny, she would have been able to share that more with the camera, with us, the viewers. So, you know, if it's as we see, then I think Malcolm probably will get the votes, because he's the most in charge of what's happened all along.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if we have a final two in the past where you have two people who are both pretty capable. Like, we tend to have a lot of final twos where it's like one person is, you know, capable and the other person's not that capable, or somebody won a bunch of challenges. You know, it's rare that we have two very strong players who work together who get to the end. I'm sure it's happened. I know it's Steven and JT, but JT swept the vote there a couple seasons back, and we haven't had that many final twos of late anyway. So it would be an interesting precedent to see how it's going to work out.
Now, what would make my day would be for either one of them to very subtly just, slit the other's throat.
Ooh.
and pull in whoever, you know, Carter, Lisa, you know, anybody.
Yeah.
And have them, in the final two with them, just whoom, oust the other one, just, you know, total blind spot. That would be fantastic and smart.
Yes.
I think Denise and Malcolm have committed to one another, but I think they ought to know that right at this point, right here, 6, 5, 4, this is the time, you know, where you've got to start planning for the switches, for the, if I didn't get rid of Rudy, I could never have won the original show.
Yeah.
Couldn't have done it, you know.
So
if I didn't make the choice I did.
Is the right move there then at 3, if it is a final two, And you have this twosome, because you can't do it at 5, because you still need your twosome to get to that point. I think the move, you have to do it at 3.
Yeah, but you've got to be planning it now. You can't at 3 then all of a sudden just, ooh, that pops into my head, let me do it by accident. You have to be looking for who you want to do it with at that 3, so you make sure that they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I think it would be tougher for either Denise or Malcolm to go against Scoopin, let's say, than to go against Lisa or Carter. So if they don't prepare to make sure that it's not Scoopin who's in the final three with them, then they can't do it. And the only reason is because Scoopin's been there. I don't know if they'd vote for him, because I don't know whether his play was respected enough by the jurors this time. But I think it would be more likely Scoopin than Abby or, you know, Lisa. The jurors wouldn't vote for either of them.
Yeah, you know, Malcolm and Denise are kind of the only people that seem like they have a chance to win the game from the jury, because the jury does not seem fond of Scoopin. They don't seem to like Lisa. They don't seem to, you know, Abby Maria is not too popular outside of with Pete and Artis. So Malcolm and Denise are then not only are they the biggest physical threats, but they're also probably the biggest jury threats to win the game.
Yeah.
It's a good combination.
So they shouldn't bring one another to the end if they're smart.
Yeah, that would be fun. That would be fun if one of them shanks the other one right there before the end. But I see a 0% chance of that happening.
Yeah.
We'll see. Rich, are you ready for some questions from the listeners of Rob as a Podcast?
Always.
Okay. We get these questions from our Facebook fan page. Go to facebook.com/Rob as a Podcast. And on Thursdays, we like to take some questions. Let's see. Let's start with one from Adam Case, and something that we've definitely touched on a little bit here. Adam Case wants to know, what does Richard think of the fact that even after 25 seasons, it's a typo, 25 seasons, players like Lisa are still conflicted about the cutthroat aspects of this game, something that you dealt with easily during the first season of the show. Can you believe that the morality aspect of Survivor is still a thing some 12 years later?
I can believe that. And I'm desperate to help people understand what that means. So hopefully you'll be able to see me on television soon.
Whoa.
With just this kind of an idea. You know, I've got a project unfolding right now that's pretty exciting for me. And it's about helping people understand exactly what you're asking. Why does this still happen? Who are we really? And why doesn't Lisa know by now? It's not that she doesn't want to know. She doesn't know. And how do you help somebody understand something they don't understand? It's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah. Especially when that thing is yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's got the perspective on the world, as each and every one of us do. You know, I don't want to get so deep here, but as every one of us has our own perspective on the world. And what if we're wrong? You know, what does that say? What should we be doing? How should we, shouldn't we live more skeptically than we do? Shouldn't we question more? Shouldn't we think more? Shouldn't we be much more open to what information is available than we are? We, for whatever reasons, tend to go with what we, and this is in huge quotes, know, whether that's been, you know, through propaganda or you know, forced down our throats or what our families taught us. And so how could it possibly be different from that? We're brighter than that. We should be. We're not. We should be, as humans, brighter than that. We've evolved with these brains that have this capacity that's amazing. And it's fascinating to me that we don't use them. And this question is an exact comment on why aren't we using our brains?
So are you saying that the first guest on this new project will be Lisa Welchel?
It certainly could be. It certainly could
yes.
be.
Will this show be called The Facts of Life with Richard Hatch?
It won't.
The New Facts of Life?
It will not have that title.
Scott Plack wants to know, perhaps this is an observation rather than a question, does it strike you as odd that veal shanks were Carter's prize? Why not a more politically correct form of meat? Were you offended by the use of veal shanks last night?
I was. You know, I didn't think that was necessary or smart of the production company to kind of so thoughtlessly go with something like that. I mean, the whole issue around whether eating meat is, you know, healthy for our planet is one thing, but, you know, the chained babies, you know, flesh, that, you know, that's how veal is raised, you know, that was tough and probably, you know, bothered quite a few viewers.
Yeah.
I personally was struck by how Carter both times in the end ended up with stuff he had to do or felt like he had to do for the group. I didn't think that was reasonable at the end for for the rule to be you can't share food, and then he buys something, and then he's told he has to share the thing. I mean, that just seemed awful to me.
It was weird. It was an odd auction for a number of reasons. I felt like there was no, like, zonk item like there normally is, where it's like, oh, it's you know, cow manure. Like, oh. Yeah. There was nothing like that. There was Carter kept getting screwed. He had to share his thing. What was with Mike Scoopin all of a sudden that Jeff opens the plate? Oh, it's wine and cheese. And Mike's 500. And he gets up there and Jeff's like, well, Mike, you must really like wine and cheese. And, no, I don't drink. Like, well, what was
I think that's evidence of what I'm talking about with Scoopin not being just like fully in control. He got the idea that he didn't want to be left out. He didn't want to lose out. So no matter what, he was just going to get something. And he actually didn't care too much what it was. But, you know, to have taken the second plate that way isn't the confident player he ought to be by now.
Yeah, I think there is a little strategy to the Survivor auction. Now, put aside the, okay, if you're in a bad position, you can buy a clue to pay for the immunity. Forget about that. But I think there is, like, ideally, if you do it right, you can get two things at the Survivor auction. If you play your cards right. I did not see a lot of people putting a lot of thought into the entire game, let alone the auction. But, yeah, that was very bizarre to bid $500 for wine and cheese.
Yeah, you know, I would love to have had the cheese. I would really have enjoyed that. I don't think the wine would have done anything for me physically or, you know, anything I would have cared about or needed in the game. But the cheese would have been, you know, a nice boost. That I would have liked those calories. I would have liked that as a food boost that I didn't want to lose. But I think he had time. I think he could have waited a minute or two, looked at it. He didn't have to just jump in, you know, right off the bat with the whole 500.
Yeah. Going back to the veal shanks, could it have been that that's like a Philippines delicacy or anything like that? Or it was just... That's,
you know, the thought about that, is it part of the culture there? Sometimes they try to expose the island, but they barely have, you know, focused on this even being in the Philippines this time. And they certainly made no connection to it. And even if it is, the Philippines is closely enough related with America that, you know, I just think that could have been more, they could have been more thoughtful about what that final thing was.
Yeah. Rich, are you a vegetarian?
I'm not. I wish I were.
Yeah, I didn't think so. But
I think it's an intelligent choice. I think you can easily get the protein you need that way. I think our weight problems could be, you know, partially related to the accessibility and the amounts of meat. I buy into the idea that raising the amounts of meat we consume is incredibly damaging to our planet. And I'm just too stupid to have made the complete change yet. Although I love vegetarian food and restaurants and seek them out.
Okay. Good to know. Ross Keeley wants to tell you, I just stayed a night on Tagi Beach for my honeymoon. Was very surreal to walk in your footsteps. Rich, did you know people are going on honeymoons to Tagi Beach?
I had no idea. I knew that they had left a part of the structures and generators that had been brought over to support the staff, which we'd never seen, you know, which was behind the scene. And I'd heard that it had been made into a place that people could vacation, but I really didn't know that was happening or was still ongoing. It's a beautiful little island.
Do they have a placard, Richard Hatch slept here?
They could have placards made of my having done all kinds of things all over that island.
Whoa.
But I don't know of any.
Yeah, okay, good. Matthew Wojcis wants to know, do you feel that Scoopin has adapted well to the way the game is now? And do you know anybody from Borneo who could do better today than they did back then? All right, we'll take this one part at a time. Has Mike Scoopin adapted well to modern-day Survivor?
I think he's playing relatively well. I think he's a little more scared, a little less confident, a little less in control than one needs to be to win. His decisions are a little too shaky. I'm not sure what the word is. It's hard for me to describe what I see when I see him do what you just described with the money at the food challenge. So I think he's adapted. You know, who knows how he would have played out his own season, but I don't know. I don't see the winning confidence in him.
Yeah. Interesting to see. And what about from your season? Is there anybody besides yourself that they should go back and bring back again from Borneo that we haven't seen before?
I don't know if he would come back, but Greg Buis was, just more of an amazing man than people realized, and quite a player. Mm-hmm. He was very, very, he was, it's like he's dead. He's a very, very bright guy. He went to Brown University in Rhode Island. He loved life. He was very energetic and playful. And people didn't really know, I think, just how much was going on in that guy's head. They thought he was weird. They didn't know what the hell he was talking about half the time. And, he had the coconut phone. But there was a lot going on. And I think he would be quite a player. I think he would give anybody a run for their money in the game.
Did he take the game seriously back then?
I don't know how seriously he took it. I don't think he was anywhere near as determined as I was to try and win it. I think he was enjoying himself, and I think that's part of his philosophy of life. That's just, as little as I know of him, I got the sense that he enjoys life and wants to live life well, and I respect that. I think now, if he were to go back, I think he would play it and be able to play it much, much more intentionally, and I think he would be quite a competitor, and that's where my answer comes from. Not that he was that determined or serious about it then.
I had watched some of your original season over the summer, and I had watched those episodes around the time where he got voted out, and I did feel like at the point after you guys voted out Gretchen, I felt like he did get a little pouty about, like, well, if this is how this is going to be and we're just going to vote out the all the good players, then I don't even want to be here. A little bit like, I'm going to take my ball and go home at that point. And now,
yeah.
I don't know how much of that was calculated on your part to get Gretchen out, but I feel like there was not the I want to win this game at all costs attitude.
I don't think he had that. I had to get rid of Gretchen because she was leading. People were respecting her and kind of doing what she was saying, and I couldn't. Greg won immunity, so Gretchen had to go. She was dangerous, but a good person. I mean,
yeah.
I really enjoyed conversation with her. But Greg wasn't serious as serious as I thought somebody needed to be in the midst of that game. But that doesn't take anything away from how intelligent he is.
Oh, yeah.
I believe. How bright he is. And even at the end, I don't know how many people know this, after he came up with whatever he came up with, pick this number, pick that number, he told me his vote for me to win was intentional, but he told me he struggled, and he said that it was close, and that my hubris almost cost me. And I've spent a lot of time thinking about that sense and how I'm perceived and how that played into the court case and people's perceptions of me and even the media and their caricature of me that really has never reflected who I actually am. And it's just always been interesting. He's a bright, bright guy, and I love being impacted by people who think and I think he thinks.
Do you feel like that's been a challenge for you in your life, that you have this perceived arrogance where people want to take you down?
Oh, no question. Yeah, no question whatsoever. And the truth is, I love people who disagree with me, who want to engage, who want to explore what we both think, what our perceptions are. But that's not how the world works most of the time. And since I really am a confident guy, I'm happy to share my opinion. And I do regularly. People think I'm not interested in theirs. And not people who know me, but people who don't know me don't understand that it's just a part of who I am. That my sharing my views as confidently and with all the assertiveness that I have is just a part of my enjoyment around the idea of meaningful exchange. And when someone else wants to disagree or engage or share their views as powerfully, I could not be happier.
Yeah. Well, you are extremely comfortable in your own skin, both literally and figuratively. And maybe that's something that, you know, people, you know, they say that what we lack is what we don't like. And so, you know, people who don't have that, maybe that's a reason why people could not like you.
Perhaps. Yeah, perhaps. I think that's probably a part of it.
Can I ask you one more season one related question? Do you ever keep in touch with Rudy anymore?
You know, I do. I am in touch and friends with his daughter as well. I mean, it was you know, really sad for him to lose Marge. And you know, he's just a good guy. And I haven't talked with him in quite a while, but I have seen him as you know many times over the years. And I do stay in touch with his daughter to make sure, you know, he's doing okay.
Yeah, I love Rudy. I mean, Rich, can you believe it was 9 years ago around this time that we were going all over Argentina and all those places? But I had the only thing that kept me sane through that time was Rudy, because he was just he cracked me up the whole time. It was really that was, you know, the best thing I could say about that part of my life.
Yeah, I still remember that time very, very, very well. 9 years, December 8th, that's my anniversary. That's what I consider the ninth year with my husband.
Yeah, well, yeah, not everybody had, you know, met the love of their lives on that trip.
Yeah, isn't that just amazing? I didn't win the All-Star version. I end up in Argentina with you, and I find more than I could ever have asked for. And, you know, I never would have been one to say, oh, the million, you know, having found Emmy, it is so much more than that money could have ever brought to my life.
See, everybody thinks Rob and Amber were the true romance from Survivor All-Stars. No, there was another love story that was
there really was and still is.
Yeah.
Couldn't be happier.
All right. Here's another question. Kobe Archa, a former Survivor, has a question. He wants to know, ask Richard what he thinks of some of the fans' idea for an all gay tribe. Would you do it? And who would you align with? Would you come back for a season with an all gay tribe?
Can you imagine?
What would they call it?
I don't know.
Would the other tribe be all anti-gay people? I mean, you can't just be like, here's like 8 or 9 straight people. I mean, what's the connecting theory? Is it lesbians on the other tribe?
Oh, interesting. Gay men versus lesbians. I don't think that would work. How do you, if it's gay guys, go gay people against straight people, you know, there'd be like all kinds of efforts to convert, you know, because that's our goal in life. And I don't know. It'd be interesting. Kobe, I would join you if they thought that was something they wanted to see, but I don't foresee that happening.
Maybe in some future edition when Survivor is airing on the Logo channel.
Right. Maybe. They've probably done it in some form or another. I don't know too many reality shows that I mean, too many reality concepts that haven't been done.
Yeah. That could be interesting.
There hasn't been any sex on Survivor, you know, to speak of. Something tells me there might be if there were an all gay team.
Whoa. Okay. Could be.
You know,
could,
I mean, I, you know.
Could be good. I don't think Rudy would watch, but it would be good.
Rudy came a long way.
Yeah. You opened his mind to a lot of things.
Yeah.
not that many things, but yeah. let's see. Eric Yu will go with playing to win or make the finals. He wants to know, does Richard believe that other than Malcolm or Denise, are the other players looking to win the game or are they just happy to make the final three? It's a shame because, as Rob has mentioned many times before, if you're final three, it's easy to stay comfortable and not make big moves. Now, we think there could be a final two, but do you think that Scoopin and Lisa are just playing to get to the finals and not to win?
Oh, I don't even know if Lisa's playing to get to the finals. Lisa's wanted to play to get to the finals. She, you know, when she entered the game, I think she had the right perspective. In other words, I think she thought she wanted to play to win. I think early on she recognized that the journey, that the actual game of Survivor is far more challenging than she had anticipated, and she was clearly emotionally unprepared for the rigors of the game. But Scoopin, I think he wants to win. I don't know if he's playing well enough to win. Clearly, Abby's not playing to win, whether she thinks she is or not. I don't think Carter's playing to win. You have to do what Denise and Malcolm are doing in order to be playing to win. Whether that actually enables you to win or not, we'll see. But Penner, I think, was playing to win. I think he made a couple of errors that cost him, and that happened. But I think he wanted to win. I think he, you know, he really loves the game and wanted to win.
Okay, let me ask you one last question from Antonios Noel Gary Fallow. He wants to know, recently in an interview, Jervis said that if anyone else had won Borneo, Survivor would not have been the hit it turned out to be. The fact that that someone that everyone loved to hate won made it so entertaining. Do you agree? Now, first off, did you know that Jervis is doing interviews?
No, I didn't.
No, who knew? So, secondly, do you buy into the fact that you won single-handedly made Survivor into the hit that it is still currently?
You know, if I were to even begin to answer that in some way that said, "Yeah, I thought I'm it,"
yeah.
People would. That would continue to paint the caricature that's out there about me. But the truth is, I think Jervis worded it well.
Yeah.
That the fact that someone that people loved to hate won it did a lot for the franchise. I think my winning it was a good thing. I think it's true that if there were someone else who won it, I think it would have impacted the franchise's longevity. But, you know, I'm not saying I'm the only one who could have won it.
Yeah.
Although, thinking back on the cast of characters, you know, Jervis, like Greg Buis, attempted to get people to join an alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all talking about how immoral and unethical and all this crazy, silly crap. And mm-hmm. he didn't know what to do with it. And he just couldn't overcome the objection. And by the time he got to me, he recognized that he was outside an alliance that was already built. But
yes.
He's a bright guy and he's really doing well for himself, too. And I didn't know he was giving interviews, but I know he's been out there and I've heard feedback about it. Him doing well and always, you know, interested in talking about the game.
Yeah. What I would say is that Survivor was a hit before you won. I mean, 50 million people tuned in to see you win. So I don't think that you winning was what made the show a hit. But if you did not win, I think that there would have been a different paradigm shift where we look at the game and say, oh, well, the way you win the game is to play like Kelly and you don't make an alliance because then people won't vote for you. And I think that we would have had a different trajectory that the game was going to go in. It's like, oh, well, you got to be nice and make sure, you know, don't make an alliance and don't stab people. And it would have been much more, I think, results oriented of, well, this obviously because Kelly won, that this is how you're supposed to play the game now. So I think Australia would have been different and other seasons would have been different. And I think,
well, and my personal belief is that that trajectory would have been much shorter because I think people would have been unimpressed with that. And so perhaps it wasn't my winning, but it was what I believed from day one was that I understood the difference between playing with the people on the show that, and giving interviews to the camera, to the viewers. Mm-hmm. And even the audience didn't get that that was a good thing, but they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's why they love to hate me, I think, because I was telling them what I'm going to do and then going to do it. And they were feeling for the underdogs, the people that I was, you know, plowing over. But I think that was a big contribution to why the game is so well liked.
I said last question. This is the real last question. Johnny Fairplay has a question for you. Don't worry, it's not that bad. He wants to know, ask him if he got his passport back yet. Very important. Thank you. So I'll read between the lines, Rich. So if you have a passport, does that make you eligible for Survivor play in the future?
I'm eligible. I'm free of all of that. It's back. I can travel.
Okay. Well, it would be something that I would love to see. But I don't need to tell you that, and I don't think you need to hear that, because we would love to see it again. Rich, this was a real pleasure. It lived up to the expectations, and this was great.
Always a pleasure, Rob.
Anything you want to get the word out about?
Nothing off the top of my head. Lots happening. All good things. I think you'll be one of the first to know when I'm able to publicize some of what's happening.
Hey, great. Well, Rich, anything we could do to help support you, you just let us know.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Rich. Take care.
Have a great night. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Nope. How do you like that? Richard Hatch on Robin the Podcast. Just a tour de force by Richard Hatch today. I thought he did a really, really great job. Always a thrill to have Richard on the podcast. And as long as I keep doing this podcast, I will always try to bring you more interviews with Rich, because nobody knows this game like he does. So just a tremendous job by Hatch. So let's see where we go from here. Let's do some voicemails and do some comments, hear what you guys had to say. But first, as Julie Chen would say, I want to play for you actually a little clip from something that I've been working on this month. I'm sure you guys, if you've been listening to the podcast regularly, know that this month I've been recording commentary for Survivor the Amazon with Jenna Maraska. We've gone back through the entire series, and now we have them just about all done. I'm finishing the editing on these commentaries, and I've got the first whole episode available for you for free if you want to listen to it. If you go to robhasawebsite.com/commentary, so you can get a sense of what that is. But I know a lot of people don't have time to do all that. So I'm going to play for you just a little clip. This is from episode 5 of Survivor the Amazon. Here's a clip of Jenna and I talking about what happened when Jenna went to go do the tribe switch with Dave Johnson on episode 5 of Survivor the Amazon. Whoa, look at
this. I just couldn't wait to get in that shower.
Now, they one bed, right, for the two of you?
Yeah, of course. And it was not a big bed, by the way.
Whoa. And did they give you guys booze also?
Yeah. But you'd be surprised. You wish you could eat more, but, you know, you eat, like, a couple bites, and you're like, oh, your stomach's like, you don't want to, like, fart up the night when you're in bed with some strange guy.
Yes. Right.
Oh, yeah. Hey, now. Bow, bow, bow.
You got to be crapping me.
What is that underwear I'm wearing? Jeez, Granny Panty. WTF? Well, that was before Hanky Pankies, I guess.
There you go. Romantic day with Dave.
When you look at yourself on this, do you even, like, does it register that it's you? Because it's so weird.
It's a little weird.
Yeah. So this is where it starts to get, like, a little bit interesting on the editing.
Okay.
Because they really just show me talking. And I remember when this episode on, when my mom was in the hospital and we watched it with her in the hospital, and she was like, oh, my God, Jenna. She's like, I know that you didn't talk that much. But they really just, literally, you can see, make it look like it's only me talking. And that couldn't be further from the truth.
So there you have it. There's a little snippet of Survivor the Amazon commentary. If you're interested in something like that, you can pre-order now through December 7th. You can save $5 off the regular price. What is going to happen if you pre-order? Then I'm going to send you an email next Friday with a download link to download the entire series of Survivor, the Amazon commentary. Rob has a website.com/commentary. And I'm also, if you buy the commentary, I'm also going to send you a link to some home movies we shot from the Survivor Amazon finale. Never before seen footage from the Survivor Amazon finale. I'm going to send that as a free gift when you order Survivor Amazon commentary. Okay, so let's get into some of the stuff that you had to say. It's time to check our voicemail inbox. I love to do the voicemail. I love this segment on the podcast. So here's what we do on the voicemail. You guys can send me messages all week long if you go to robhasawebsite.com/voicemail, or you could click the button at the top of the podcast page on robhasawebsite.com. Just click, it says voicemail all the way on the top of the all new robhasawebsite.com. So if you go ahead and check that, you could leave us a voicemail just like some of our callers today. And so let's go ahead and start with our friend Brian Hickey. Brian, take it away.
Hey, Rob. Brian Hickey here. We all know Abby can't win the game, but what do you think her final three chances are? And is it just me, or is she being redeemed a little with this last episode? I found myself not hating her anymore, and I'm wondering if I am the only one who kind of likes Abby now. Have you been getting any sort of response from the fans? Can we like Abby? Need a ruling on this. Thanks, Rob.
All right, Brian. I like that you came to me for a ruling. I appreciate that. I want to be the person to settle all of these Survivor scores. So the question is, can we root for Abby now? Is it okay for Survivor fans to root for Abby Maria? And I will say that yes. Yes, it is okay for you to root for Abby Maria so far in the game. That's okay. She has not said anything that was offensive. She's just being pretty crabby. I mean, she's hasn't been overly strategic, but she's coming around. She could be an underdog here down the stretch. So yes, it is okay for you to root for Abby Maria, but no, she has no chance to win the game. But here's the thing that people need to remember when they're out there on Survivor, because it gets very much into like a pack mentality, and I don't think that the players can really see how the show is being edited. If there are, you know, eight people on a tribe and one person is just like a jerk and it's not part of the group or whatever, you could be the seven nicest people. The show's going to be edited to this, oh, the seven people are all being mean to the one person. I mean, go down the line that, and it's always like the one person is going to make an immunity run or do something. It happens like 9 times out of 10. If you are on Survivor and there's one person that's ostracized from the group, it without a doubt the editing will be that this person is being bullied by a mean group of people. So if you're out there on Survivor, just know that's how the show's being edited. Don't be ganging up on the one person because you'll look like a jerk. And then even Abby Maria, who's been a horrible person this whole season, now people are even coming around and rooting for her because the other players are all not talking to her. So it just goes to show, do not ostracize the other people on Survivor because they'll make it look like on the show that they're the good guy. All right, Michael O'Keefe, what do you got?
This is Michael O'Keefe from Canada. My question is, with the season coming to an end in a few weeks, have you thought about who you're going to endorse for fan favorite? Thanks.
Okay, Michael O'Keefe, great question. I hadn't even been thinking about this. Who am I going to endorse? Who, better yet, will Rob Has a Podcast Nation going to endorse? And now, this is always a good question. Now, I have always invited the survivors to court my approval, my endorsement for Survivor fan favorite. And nobody has stepped up to the plate, to my knowledge, in an effective way, or anybody who has been a real contender. I think I endorsed the Rooster last semester of Survivor, which I don't really recall if I did that or not, but that sounds familiar. So nobody with a real shot of winning it has ever courted the endorsement of the hardworking, social media savvy, dedicated, committed fans of Rob Has a Podcast. Now, it seems like something that could put somebody over the edge if they were really a contender, and I'm not sure why a savvy Survivor player would not take advantage of such an active fan base and try to court our approval and our endorsement. Now, what could they offer? I don't know. That's not up to me to decide, but the phone lines are open. The voicemail is open. Go to robhasawebsite.com/voicemail and tell us if you're a survivor, what will you do for the endorsement of this podcast for fan favorite? $100,000 is on the line. Could it hurt? Could it hurt? That's all I'm asking. Could it hurt your chances, or could it help your chances? Because you know what? If I had a chance to win $100,000 in 2 weeks, you could bet damn sure I would be doing everything in my power. I would be going door to door, knocking on doors, handing out flyers in parking lots, tweeting, doing all sorts of things. So if I had a podcast with over 10,000 Survivor listeners every week, I think I would be doing my best to court their endorsement here for Survivor 25 fan favorite. All right, let's go to number here. Let's play. This is comes to us, and it's another question about Avi Maria.
Hey, Robin, Nicole, John here. I had a quick question about last night's episode. I think Denise has been someone that's been really popular this season amongst all the fans. But I've noticed that the last two episodes, a lot of people have started to question how much they like Denise because they haven't really liked how she's been treating Abby Maria. I'm no fan of Abby, but even I've noticed that it seems like she's being a little, maybe going too far with the Abby hate. You know, Malcolm did a good job of tempering it, seeming like the nice guy. I was wondering what you guys think. Is Denise going too far with this? I mean, Abby is going to be on the jury.
All right. Is Denise going too far? See, people, I think that Brian Hickey is onto something. People, the fans of Survivor are coming around and starting to root for Abby Maria of all people now. And who knows, maybe Abby Maria could be the fan favorite. And Russell Hance has won it twice. It wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world for Abby Maria to win the fan favorite. So yes, and it just goes back to what I was saying before. If there's one person who's ostracized, it does not matter how much of a jerk said ostracized person has been. Everybody will feel bad for the person that's ostracized. And if you are taking part in the ostracizing, you will look like a bad person. And I don't think that Denise has done anything wrong, but because that's been the narrative of, oh, everybody, nobody likes Abby Maria, Denise has been the scapegoat on this. She's the figurehead of the I don't like Abby Maria movement. And so she is being vilified like that. And, you know, oh, I hate to say it, comes down to gender roles on Survivor. We don't like to see the women talk bad about the other women. I don't know why that is. And it would take somebody, maybe somebody who is a sex therapist, to be able to tell us a little bit more about that. Why we say, oh, that's catty. Oh, she's talking bad about her. So we don't like that. But I'm telling you, Denise, people are souring on Denise because of the too much with this Abby Maria. And that's no good. All right. How about we're going to go from Abby Maria to one of our callers named Abby. This is Abby Almendinger. I like that name, Almendinger.
This is Abby Almendinger from Missouri. I heard Ron Chan's recent offer to get Deb Eaton on the line with you. I would like to make a similar offer of $50 to get either Greg Buis, Colleen Haskell, or Elizabeth Filarski on the podcast. Can you make it happen? Thanks, guys. Absolutely love the show. Take care.
All right. So Ron Chan last or 2 weeks ago, I believe he proposed a $50 bounty if somebody could bring him the head of Deb Eaton on the podcast, Deb Eaton. And then I was also this week on Facebook, somebody else messaged me that they would throw in another $50 for Deb Eaton. I don't know where Jeff Varner is, although I messaged Jeff Varner about this and I said that there's a $50 bounty. And I think that somehow in the translation, he interpreted that as Deb Eaton was getting the $50, which was not what I implied, but I'd be okay with that. I'd be okay with Deb Eaton. And at this point, I'd split the $100 with Deb Eaton if we could get her on the podcast. So now here comes Abby, and she is going to throw in another $50 bounty on Greg Buis, who mentioned earlier in this podcast, Colleen Haskell, and Elizabeth Filarski Hasselbeck. Well, one of those three people is on Twitter, so that's one of them's easy. I can just tweet to Elizabeth Filarski, hey, I've got a $50 bounty right now. If you come on Rob as a podcast, I can score $50. I'll split it with you. That's an easy one, I would think. But the other two may be tougher to track down, so we'll see. But I do like the direction that Bounty Gate is going here on Rob as a podcast, and you guys are putting your money where your mouth is. You know how to incentivize a podcaster. So lots of when we started doing voicemails on this show, I did not think that a recurring theme of the show would be I will pay this much money to hear from this survivor. I just hope that somebody really wants to hear from Billy Garcia or somebody like that. Give me an easy one. We'll see. All right, last one. Here it comes. This is from one of our listeners, Matt.
Rob, what is this? This is Matt Hoffman from Big Brother Season 12. You are always at the pinnacle of technology. Am I on the internet right now? Rob, is this a podcast? Well, anyway, I just wanted to say congratulations on your new technology. It's fantastic. I will talk to you later. Signing off of the internet, Rob.
There you go. Matt Hoffman. Yes, he even Matt Hoffman, a diabolical super genius, can leave us voicemail here on robhasawebsite.com/voicemail. Love the voicemail. That's a fun segment for me. All right, let's turn our attention to your comments here and hear some of the things that you guys have to say and check in with some of the survivors are saying on Twitter. And all this stuff comes to us from our head of interns, Eric Nelson, this week, who did a great job. All right, so first, let's start on the social media side of things. And while the Twitter has been a little quiet for the survivors so far this season, we have some news to report on the social media front that Russell Hance, the Russell Hance, is now on Instagram. Because now, if I know the Hance family and social media, I know that this is going to be, there'll be something here eventually. So everybody, we need to be following Russell Hance on Instagram. I believe he's, I'm not sure how Instagram works. I think at Russell Hance, I think is his username. I'm not sure if he's supposed to say at on Instagram or not. Russell Hance had a good tweet last night talking about with the wine in the immunity challenge when Jeff said he would drink Mike Scoopin's wine. He said, that's the best thing I've heard Jeff say. Are you going to drink that wine? Because otherwise, I'll drink it. So funny. That was funny. You never. Jeff doesn't strike me as a big drinker, but wouldn't you have wanted to see Jeff host the auction with a glass of wine in his hand? It could have been fun if Jeff just started drinking at random points on Survivor. I mean, I would not be opposed to Jeff having a glass of wine at Tribal Council, saying, all right, let's get into this. All right. So here's what I want to know. Scoopin' tonight, is it going to be a glass of red or how about a nice Pinot Grigio? any of those things that could be good. I would be open to Jeff. Would you guys like to see our wine list tonight? Maybe everybody should have a glass of wine at Tribal Council. It could be like a communion. Make everything maybe a little more spiritual. Who knows at Tribal Council? And you know what? God knows what these survivors would start saying if they were getting a little wine, getting a little nip on the way into Tribal Council. So who knows? That could only make for a more exciting. You know, we don't want people like sloppy drunk, but maybe a little socially lubricated might be not be a bad thing. All right, so let's see what else. Jeff, speaking of inappropriate things from Jeff, we have a potentially inappropriate comment from Jeff Probst this week, out of context, inappropriate comment. Jeff said to Abby Maria, "What a journey it has been. You went from being on top to being on the bottom." There you go. So there's a potentially inappropriate comment by Jeff Probst. We get lots of tweets all week coming to us from hashtag RHAP. We love hearing them. A lot of people were excited about Survivor Jeopardy. F.Y. Maxwell, the Survivor professor, he said contestant eligibility criteria did not make the merge. Hashtag RHAP. So that was true. Everybody on Survivor Jeopardy was a pre-merge player. But Survivor Jeopardy was a ton of fun. I can't wait to do it again. Could be some twists in store for Survivor Jeopardy 2 coming in January. Already working on how that's going to go. Very excited for Survivor Jeopardy 2. You could watch Survivor Jeopardy 1 by going to SurvivorJeopardy.com. And that's going to just about do it for this week on Rob Has a Podcast. One cool thing that we're doing this week from our friends over at Tundra Gear, Adas, the winner of a Survivor Exile Island, the creator of the Tundra Hat, and the creator of the website, robhasatundrahat.com. We've gotten together and get so many people asking us, how can we win a Tundra Hat? So what we're going to do for now until the end of the year, going to give away a Tundra Hat a week for what we're calling our Tundra Cap-tion, get it? Tundra Cap-tion contest. So every week we will give you a new picture of a survivor in a tundra hat, and we want you to come up with the best or funniest caption for said picture. And this week it is none other than our guest on the podcast this week, Richard Hatch, and it's Richard Hatch in all his glory. You can submit your caption by going to robhasawebsite.com/tundracaption. Go to that page. It's on the front page of robhasawebsite.com as well. Leave us a comment. Don't copy somebody else, but go ahead and leave us an original comment. And then Adas and I are going to get together over the weekend and we'll figure out who had the best one. And we'll announce it on Tuesday on Rob Has a Web Show. And then on Survivor Know-It-Alls, we'll give you a new picture, give you another chance to win a Tundra cap, Shin, courtesy of our friends over at robhasatundrahat.com, and save 25% on Tundra hats this holiday season when you use the coupon code RobHasACoupon. People love the Tundra hats. I'm going to be wearing mine when I go to New York this weekend, as I am about to do. So Nicole and I, once we wrap up over here today, we'll be getting on a plane, going to visit some family back east this weekend, and then be back with you guys over on Monday for another week of podcasting. Should be a lot of fun. So thanks to everybody who's been shopping on Amazon.com with our links and going to robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. We really appreciate it. We are really feeling the love from you guys when you do that. And thank you guys very much. It's been really great. And you guys are doing a great job knocking things off your holiday shopping list. You guys are going to be able to enjoy the holiday season, not like some of these slackers like me who are going to wait until the last minute. So good job by everybody going to robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, saving money and supporting the podcast. So that's going to do it for this week on Rob Has a Podcast. More to come next week. There could be a little podcast that I'm going to put together for you guys over the weekend. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.